Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. You're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA-FM, home of the New Year's Eve Gala featuring Cyrus Chestnut. Details at WEAA.org. Join us for an incredible festive evening on New Year's Eve. Go to WEAA.org, get your tickets, and come party with us all night long. Even Marcella Shepard will be there, I think. Yes, he says he will be there, so that means he will. So join us there. I also remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. More information at www.mecu.com. Or you can jump onto signuppage.org and click on their banner. All the information is right there. And if you don't live in Baltimore, Maryland, well, it'll tell you how to get to your credit union wherever you listen to us around the nation. We're joined here by Michael Kimmel, who is an American sociologist specializing in gender studies, professor of sociology at Stony Brook University in New York, and is the founder and editor of the Academic Journal for Men and Masculinities and spokesperson for the National Organization for Men Against Sexism, NOMAS. And Edward Y. Cuff Jones joins us once again. Always great to have him on the show with us, contributing editor at The Root, columnist and political analyst who has appeared on Al Jazeera, MSNBC, CBS, and The Mark Steiner Show. So, Edward and Michael, welcome. Good to have you with us. So, one of the things we left off yesterday was the role that race plays in both violence and in the love affair with guns that America has. And Edward, I was really interested to read the piece you wrote in The Root this morning, where you begin to touch on some of those issues, because it always comes up. I mean, we read the names. We'll read the names again of the young people who died in that horrendous shooting in Newtown. And then people start reflecting when they have a chance, at least on programs like this, about the larger issues surrounding this and how we don't think about how issues of race play into this. And I think it's important for us not to forget it, Edward.
Yeah, and I think what was really interesting for me to talk about is the plight of children and child victims of gun violence. And so what really struck me about the Children's Defense Fund research showing that 45% of all child victims in this country of gun violence are African-American children and teenagers, even though they only represent 15% of the population of all children in the U.S., I think is a great way to sort of introduce race into this conversation about specifically how gun violence affects children. And so when we look at the fact that more children died from gun violence in 2008 and 2009 than law enforcement officers died in the line of duty, and the fact that the total number of children and teenagers that died in the U.S. from gun violence out-totaled the number of soldiers who died in battle in Iraq and Afghanistan in that same year, I think is really, really troubling. So I chose to focus really on looking at it from that angle because I think a lot of people don't realize how shocking the real statistics are. And I think we all gutturally have this reaction to the thought of children dying, whether that child is 17 years old and walking home with Skittles and iced tea like Trayvon Martin was, or whether that's a 6 or 7 year old in their first grade classroom. I think ultimately the violence in and of itself being brought to bear on the innocent should alarm us all, whether we are black, brown, Asian, Latino, whatever. I think that talking about it in that way, but then also bringing light to the fact that there is an added burden in black and brown communities will really help to open people's eyes and start a different kind of dialogue.
Michael, please jump in.
Well, let me say, first of all, I think that that is the most important half of the equation that I think we have to talk about. I've been thinking all day today about, you know, what if all of the victims, what if this was an inner city public elementary school and all the victims were children of color? W- would you be using, would the media be using the same language of angels and how innocent they were? I don't know the answer to this.
I'm so glad you said that. I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you.
That's the first thing. But I want to push another kind of question.
Sure.
And not just focus on the victims of this. And I think you're quite right, of course, to focus on the unbelievable amount of violence, among children of color. But here's the other thing. How come... here's another place where race figures into this. Everybody has been talking. There's been a tremendous amount of outpouring of analysis on the masculinity of rampage school shootings. And that's been a very important piece because that's, after all, what I study. But almost no one's talking about the fact that these are all white guys. Now, what is it? Is there something about race and the shooter? Now, and I think that there might be. I have a hypothesis about this that might have something that might explain something as well. Which is the way, every single case where a guy walks in somewhere and just opens fire randomly, just shooting, it, with the exception of Seung-Hui Cho at Virginia Tech, every one of those has been a white guy. I think the idea of, now it's true that, as the articles have been talking about, that a lot of rampage shooters have a tremendous sense of victimization. They feel themselves to be victimized unjustly, and they decide to take revenge on the rest of the world. And all of these guys, of course, commit suicide as well. They commit suicide by mass murder. You've heard of suicide by cop. This is suicide by mass murder. They go in and they murder, and they say, I'm going to kill myself, but I'm taking as many of them as I can with me. And my feeling is that feeling is a white feeling. The entitlement to take as many of them with you, you don't hear about that in the African-American community, do you? You don't hear about young black boys killing themselves and killing a whole lot of other people, too. You hear about them targeting each other. You hear about gang violence. You hear about them shooting each other. You betcha. But you don't hear about the rampage just running through a school, shooting indiscriminately. That seems to be a white thing. Now, I think that it has to do with that sense of entitlement. Like, if I'm going down, so is everyone else. I don't think that boys of color have that sense of entitlement to take the rest of the world with them.
Edward?
I think that there might be a valid point there. I think that there's probably a lot of research that would have to be done on the psychosis of the white American male in order to back that argument up. And I'm a bit less willing to go directly to the conclusion that he's going to, but I'm not going to refute that at all. I think that there's something else going on, and I think it'd be better for us to focus, particularly for the audience, to focus the question of how we police then white males. Mm-hmm. If we see that white males commit the majority of gun violence in this country, which is actually a fact established by the FBI statistics, right? Even though there's a lot of talk in the media about the kind of violence that we see on the streets of Chicago, the truth of the matter is the majority of gun crimes in this country, the majority of assaults and murders in this country, as well as suicides, occurs at the hands of white males. And I think that because the gun lobby is basically controlled by wealthy white males and our entire sort of political infrastructure and economic system is as well, I think that the reason that we do not see the racial profiling of white males for gun crimes, the crackdown, and let's say just even in New York, where Mayor Bloomberg, after being presented with clear evidence by the New York Civil Liberties Union in 2011 that showed that in all the stop and frisk, despite the fact that they were focusing on young black and Hispanic boys, in all those stop and frisk, they found that white males were more than two times more likely to be carrying guns. And Mayor Bloomberg, despite that evidence and claiming that the stop and frisk had nothing to do with catching young boys with drugs, but rather with guns, still defended the policy of stopping more black and Hispanic boys, shows that there's a complete disconnect between the way that we police and what the statistics actually tell us. And so I think that it's a bit ludicrous to say that, oh, it's just because of mental illness, and how could you have known? I think there were clear signs that Adam Lanza was about near to crazy. And I think that there were clear signs that other people like the boy who committed the crime in Aurora, Colorado, or the one in Tucson, Arizona. There were clear signs, but I think that as a culture, we don't have a way of expressing fear of white men. I think that we have a fear of young black boys who are skinny and 17 like Trayvon, who only have Skittles. We have a fear of that that's easily articulated, that is well accepted, and that has become status quo. We do not know how to police or express a way of talking about the danger that white males present in our society. And I think that's because, back to the point that he just made, they basically been at the helm of everything. And so they've articulated what it is policy dictates and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's problematic. And I think that now we have an African-American president. We have an African-American attorney general. And I think that the NRA is completely out of control. We need gun control. And I don't care what white men in the South and the Midwest have to say about it. We need to stop them from having assault weapons where when they decide they want to go crazy, they can kill 6- and 7-year-olds or 17-year-olds.
So let me open the phones here and get some callers in here while we have some time at 410-319-8888. Sorry, there's a little echo there. We'll try to get that out. Hank in Baltimore, you're on the air.
How are you doing today, Mr.
Very well, Hank. Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
We can hear you, Hank. Go ahead.
Mr. Steiner?
I can hear you.
We can hear you, Hank.
Hello? Hello, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Hank, we got you. Go ahead.
All right. I'm going to turn my radio up just a little bit. Here's my deal, right? I want you to listen to this. A man stands in the field and shoots a gun. Another man dies, right? Now, listen to this. A man stands in the fields and thickets as you hear a loud thunder clap. Whistling through the wind, you hear a bullet ricochet and hit a man. What's more titillating? A man standing there getting shot, or the man getting shot with the gun whistle through his dick? Right? We are titillized by the way we are worded, by word, the way things are worded. So therefore, it makes it more romantic to hear that. Right? And here's another thing. Once again, right? They have technology where so you can put a chip in the gun so that the person who owns the gun is the only person who can buy the gun. Why are they not putting no chips in there? Another thing. Why is it that when white America, world white America goes and kills somebody, the mental instability that's in it, but let a black man go through 5 or 6 different states shooting somebody, he's a terrorist. What's the difference? I can't really hear y'all, so I'm going to turn my phone up and turn my radio back on.
All right, cool. Thank you. Michael Kimmel?
Mark?
Yes.
Hello?
Michael?
Yes, hello?
Go ahead. Can you want to respond to Hank?
Well, I wasn't able to completely hear the first couple of questions that he proposed, but I did hear the last one, and I do think, you know, this is something that's important. I think that, you know, if all of these school shooters had been poor black girls in Newark or Philadelphia or Chicago, we'd be having a conversation about, oh, the pathology of the black community or the culture mm-hmm. of poverty. And the fact that they're all middle and upper class white boys in suburban schools and rural schools, you know, nobody wants to talk about that. So I do think that there is something to be said. There is a conversation to be had about this.
There needs to be a policy response.
Well, so let me just let Michael finish his thought. Go ahead.
What I'm concerned about is this, the ease in which there is a kind of monocausal explanation. Okay, it was mental illness. Okay, it was guns. Okay, it was, you know, even masculinity. It was all of these crazy things, it was video games, or did you hear Mike Huckabee say it was godlessness in the schools? I mean, it's just, you know, my feeling about this is that these are very complicated, and there's a lot of different causes, and the equation has to include access to guns, because after all, there was a school shooting in 1996 in Scotland, and after which England, the United Kingdom passed laws which make it pretty much illegal to own a handgun, and they haven't had one since, mm-hmm. right? So guns is important. Mental illness is definitely important. This guy flew right under the radar. It seems that he was somewhat autistic. But, you know, mental illness is an issue. Undiagnosed, deinstitutionalized mental illness is an issue. Masculinity is an issue. Race is an issue. Media violence is an issue. They're all part of the picture. And if we keep focusing on one and one only, and the most important thing is if we keep trying to pathologize him into his mental illness, we will miss the larger point. Adam Lanza is not them. He's one of us. And so, and he internalized values that we ourselves hold, that we taught him. He didn't make this stuff up. You know, we don't get mad, we get even. If you feel victimized, you take someone out.
Edward?
Mike, that was seriously powerful. I take my hat off to you for that one. He's not one of them, he is one of us. And I think that Mike makes a really important point to talk about how our society has basically given birth to Adam Lanza, you know, and people like him. I think I want to make a point following on from what the caller was talking about in terms of race and which Mike picked up on as well. I do not like, and I've written about this, but not too much, I do not like when there is a crime like this committed by a white male, and the immediate response is to talk about mental illness. But when crimes are committed by black males, in particular black males, but I guess Latinos as well, there's this sense that somehow it's a pathology that has to do with their very nature, right? That this is just who they are. And I don't know if that comes out of slavery times. I don't really know what the history of this is. But somehow there's this way that our society can forgive a white male's crimes as though it's not inherent to his being, whereas somehow black males are responsible for not just their crimes but their conditions. So responsible for their own poverty, responsible for that poverty being a derivative of slavery and Jim Crow and oppression and lack of employment and opportunities and being harassed by police and the whole gamut of problems that we know occur in our society as a result of America's dark racial history. And I do think that there's a problem with that that I think probably then speaks to this sense that Mike was talking about earlier, that white men are sort of losing a grip, you know, particularly in the age of Obama and the rise of Latinos and the diversification of this country, losing that grip, that now the only response, therefore, is a violent one. I don't want to get too much into that because I have not studied it, and obviously Mike is more articulate on that. But back to my main point about a policy response, if we were to focus just on mental illness, we would miss the point. Assault weapons that belong in battlefields do not belong in the hands of American civilians. And I think that when people talk about the fact, it's not about guns because they were purchased legally. Yes, his mother purchased an assault rifle legally, and she should never have been able to. And between 1994 and 2004 in this country, she would not have been able to. So even if he had gone crazy and stolen her handgun, he would have probably been able to get off about 6 bullets. That would have saved the lives of 21 people in that school, and Americans need to know that. They need to be vocal about that. They need to hold President Obama to that.
Can I just jump in one more?
Yeah.
One more second? I thought what Edward just said was really, really important. It's when we talk about a white perpetrator, we talk about mental illness. When we talk about a black perpetrator, we talk about the social pathology of the community. So that's different, right? But what's similar is in both cases, we, the white media establishment, get to make it the problem of the other. Either it's the social pathology of that community or it's the mental illness of that bad apple, that individual. In neither case do we say it's about us. Mm-hmm. It's always about them in both cases. So there's something different, individual mental illness and social pathology, but there's also something quite similar about it in that othering process. And that's what I think we have to get – that's what we have to interrogate.
Well, I mean, I think part of the problem is it's always about us as society. We don't talk about the mental illness that exists in the streets. Because of poverty, because of many things, and that's something we don't talk about. I mean, I think that, when we come back, we'll talk more about in another show about the whole question of gun control. I mean, there are arguments on both sides of that, I'm not talking about just the kind of pro NRI right wing gun nuts. I'm talking about people who who think that, we should be focusing on one thing. If you're focusing on guns, people think we should be focusing on the moral dilemma that is America. I want to be able to read this, but there's too much to read here. There's one email coming in from John Parks, who's from Washington, D.C. He lays it all out in a really interesting way. And if I have time, I'm going to read it. But let me try to get another caller in here. And let me go to Chris. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Chris, can you hear us?
Hello.
All right.
Hey, can you hear us?
Chris, you're on the air, Chris.
Okay. Here's my thing. I agree with everything your guests have said, Mark. But in order to make this I guess I've been talking about this for some time. I think the best way to have a good starting point is to level the playing ground, and let's talk about the Second Amendment as a right. And forget whether you're for or against guns. Just look at how. You talked about the racial aspect of it and how the amendment came about and how it's talked about. You look at the violence in our own community right here in Baltimore City, and everybody else has spoken about it but our mayor. There's no discussion of the Second Amendment among black people. When it's spoken about among white people, it's spoken about as a right, as an American right, as a patriotic right. When guns are spoken about among black people, whether it's on the news, whether it's talked about with politicians, it's spoken about as a crime. And we have to first look at even how the term felon came about in American jurisprudence. We're not having a real discussion about equal rights in this country. And again, forget whether you're for or against guns. You have to have equality first. And then we'll see, okay, this needs to be taken out of the American community, or you need to talk about it for everyone. If you look at it in this conversation, the people who talk about self-defense and the Second Amendment right usually live in areas where there's no violent crime. Where there's violent crime, people don't talk about the Second Amendment and self-defense. This that basic level of equality needs to be talked about first, and then we can go into the pathology, I'm not to discredit those arguments at all, but again, we got to have equality first, and then all of a sudden you'll see not so many people want to go into these areas. That's just an issue to me, and it has been for a long time. Just in transit, you have somebody that's 18 that committed a so-called felony, a nonviolent felony. It could be anything. Theft over 500 is a felony. An officer that stops you and says one guy has possession, but this guy has possession with the intent, could be the same thing. He gets a felon. Now, 20, 30 years later, he's not allowed to protect his family and his home, but he's also not allowed to protect himself from other people who would want to assault him. I mean, there's a level of equality. We have to look at how did this inequality come about, and then we can go into all these other areas and why some people feel privileged. And while other people are supposed to be marginalized.
Now, Chris, you raised a really important issue. We're about to go to break, and we have another subject we have to bring up because we have to talk about a man's case who's in prison now that many people think should not be in prison here locally in Baltimore. But we're going to carry this conversation over just for a few minutes when we come back, because I want to let Michael and Edward comment on it and have a wrap-up. So we'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. We're here with Michael Kimmel, American sociologist, specializing in gender studies, professor of sociology at Stony Brook University, and founder and editor of the academic journal Men and Masculinities, and spokesperson for the National Organization for Men Against Sexism. Edward Wyckoff Williams is contributing editor at The Root, columnist and political analyst who's appeared on Al Jazeera, MSNBC, and CBS. So I'd like you all to comment, Edward and Michael, from what you just heard from Chris.
Mm-hmm. Michael, you can first, please.
Okay, sure. I just want to say one quick thing about this, and it underscores something that Edward was talking about the assault weapons. If you read the Second Amendment, behind which all of this sort of hides, around which all of this swirls, it says a well-regulated militia,
being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to bear and keep arms shall not be infringed. That's all it says. It's about individual liberty, right? It's about individual liberty, the right of the people to bear arms. But look at the first phrase, a well-regulated militia. The amendment, it says we need regulations on this. It's not just, you know, freedom is not license. You must have a well-regulated militia. You know, you can't just have people running around with guns. It's quite clear. The whole idea of whether or not individual liberty can be infringed, it says so. It says it has to be well regulated. That's what's necessary to the security of a free people. So my feeling is there is nothing in the Constitution, nothing whatever, that forbids the government from regulating its militia.
And I think I completely agree with Mike. I think that the last thing I want to say is it's really important for African-Americans and Latinos to become a part of this conversation. It often gets dominated by special interests, namely those on the far right who are gun-toting NRA members who believe in some sort of manifest destiny, that this is their quote-unquote land and this is their freedom to protect. I think there is a dark racial element to that, which black and brown people have often been kept out of that conversation. But I think in order to protect our children, our babies, anytime we have more children dying as a result of gun violence than law enforcement officers and soldiers on battlefields, then that means that America has gone down a pathway, and it is a dark, dark place. And so I think beyond race, beyond the race of Adam Lanza or even the race of Trayvon Martin, at the end of the day, those were kids in that school. They did not deserve to die. Trayvon Martin was a child and did not deserve to die. And I think guns are the problem. They are the ultimate problem, and they must, like Michael said, be regulated. Yes, you have freedom, but you do not have license to kill.
I want to thank both of you for joining us today, Michael Kimmel and Edward Wyckoff-Williams. Good to have you on the show for the first time, Michael. And Edward, always great to have you with us.
Always a pleasure, buddy.
We'll talk very soon.
Bye-bye.
And thank you all for calling and writing in, and we'll continue this conversation because it's very critical.